This time, we come to the conclusion of the 12th chapter, The Divine Work. It is this deeper sense in which we must accept the dictum of the Gita, that action determined and governed by the nature must be our law of works. It is not certainly the superficial temperament or the character or habitual impulses that are meant, but in the literal sense of the Sanskrit word, our own being, our essential nature, the divine stuff of our souls. Whatever springs from this root or flows from these sources is profound, essential, right. The rest, opinions, impulses, habits, desires, may be merely surface formations or casual vagaries of the being or impositions from outside. They shift and change, but this remains constant. It is not the executive forms taken by nature in us that are ourselves, or the abidingly constant and expressive shape of ourselves. It is the spiritual being in us, and this includes the soul becoming of it, that persists through time in the universe. A profound passage. The dictum of the Gita. What from delusion you desire not to do, you will helplessly do, bound by the work born of your swabhava. Let's take note that the Gita and Sri Aurobindo, reading it deeply, sees that the swabhava is an expression of the original self as individual above the play of prakriti. Let's begin again. It is this deeper sense in which we must accept the dictum of the Gita, that action determined and governed by the nature must be our law of works. It is not certainly the superficial temperament or the character or habitual impulses that are meant, but in the literal sense of the Sanskrit word, our own being, our essential nature, the divine stuff of our souls. Whatever springs from this root or flows from these sources is profound, essential, right. The rest, opinions, impulses, habits, desires, may be merely surface formations or casual vagaries of the being or impositions from outside. They shift and change, but this remains constant. It is not the executive forms taken by nature in us that are ourselves, or the abidingly constant and expressive shape of ourselves. It is the spiritual being in us, and this includes the soul becoming of it, that persists through time in the universe. So, the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter and the 60th shloka says, what from delusion you desire not to do, you will helplessly do, bound by the work born of your swabhava. And it's instructive to remember that Krishna here is not chiding the aspirant Arjuna, but encouraging him, because this is his highest nature, attempting to fulfill its mission in time through the forms, the instruments given to it in time. Swabhava is own being, your very nature, born of your jiva, the truth of your individuality within the person of the Purushottama. Your truth arises in that supreme nature, one with the conscious Lord of all being. Your individuality expresses itself, breathes itself into nature here through your swabhava, which then fashions a swadharma that fits it pretty well, chooses a vehicle, an adhara, mind, life, body, in which it houses itself and goes forward into the world. But it is your swabhava whose will is essentially done here through all the modes of nature, finding its way, canvassing its way through ignorance, finding the path that elucidates the purpose of its mission. It is this swabhava which the Gita at 8.3 identifies with your adhyatma, with your inmost self. This is the source of your own personhood. This is what is your soul's passage into nature. If the soul could not really appear in nature, there would be no unity between spirit and matter possible. If your soul could not evince something of itself here, it would really be always aloof, purusha, absolutely separated from prakriti, and no divine work would be possible. The only solution would be an exit from the cosmos. But Sri Aurobindo says this is not so. He reads the Gita correctly in this. So what flows from your swabhava is profound, and its soul becoming in the universe persists. So if Purushottama is beyond the stretch of time, rolls time out from its own being, you are part of that. You are essentially eternal. What you become in time is immortal, playing through the shapes that the soul chooses. So you are the immortal moving through time. You're indestructible. No, your body is not. Your ego comes and goes. Your moods change constantly. All that is phenomenal in you is always moving around. But your essential self, unchanging, seated always in the truth of its own being, shining from its own light, but here too, capable of demonstrating itself in action in this world, our world. We cannot, however, easily distinguish this true inner law of our being. It is kept screened from us so long as the heart and intellect remain unpurified from egoism. Till then, We follow superficial and impermanent ideas, impulses, desires, suggestions, and impositions of all kinds from our environment or work out formations of our temporary mental, vital, physical personality, that passing experimental and structural self, which has been made for us by an interaction between our being and the pressure of a lower cosmic nature. So here's that interface, here's that conversation between spirit and nature that is so productive and so beguiling. In proportion as we are purified, the true being within declares itself more clearly. Our will is less entangled in suggestions from outside or shut up in our own superficial mental constructions. Egoism renounced, the nature purified, action will come from the soul's dictates, from the depths or the heights of the spirit, or it will be openly governed by the Lord, who was all the time seated secretly within our hearts. 1861, turning all beings mounted on a machine by his Maya. The supreme and final word of the Gita for the yogin is that he should leave all conventional formulas of belief and action, all fixed and external rules of conduct, all constructions of the outward or surface nature, dharmas, and take refuge in the divine alone. 1866. Free from desire and attachment, one with all beings, living in the infinite truth and purity, and acting out of the profoundest deeps of his inner consciousness, governed by his immortal, divine, and highest self, all his works will be directed by the power within, through that essential spirit and nature in us, which, knowing, warring, working, loving, serving, is always divine, towards the fulfillment of God in the world, an expression of the eternal in time. A divine action arising spontaneously, freely, infallibly from the light and force of our spiritual self in union with the divine is the last state of this integral yoga of works. The truest reason why we must seek liberation is not to be delivered individually from the sorrow of the world, though that deliverance too will be given to us, but that we may be one with the divine, the supreme, the eternal. And this is the previous verse, 1865, where one is essentially and dynamically one with the supreme in all phases of nature, in knowledge in the mind, in love in the heart, fulfilling works in the world through the body as a spirit in time. The truest reason why we must seek perfection, a supreme status, purity, knowledge, strength, love, capacity, is not that personally we may enjoy the divine nature or be even as the gods, though that enjoyment too will be ours, but because this liberation and perfection are the divine will in us, the highest truth of our self in nature, the always intended goal of a progressive manifestation in the universe. So we are not called to the renunciation, the damning of the world, which traditions of shamanic influence have exerted upon India over the centuries, Buddhism, Jainism, and we're not called to the empty gratification of simple pleasure in the world either. The divine nature, he writes, free and perfect and blissful, must be manifested in the individual in order that it may manifest in the world. So the truth of the spirit, living from that self-light, exhibiting itself in power and works, bringing all into a movement of self-consecration, and in that is the seat of enjoyment, is not that the individual escapes from perdition or from suffering or from being convicted to live in a body of ego and desire, but to fulfill a cosmic purpose. So here again, Sri Aurobindo speaks to the transcendent, speaks to the universal, speaks to the individual. And this interface of the three, all these three modes of being, are genuine and valid and precious to the divine itself. And the reason that it calls this world into being and pours itself into it is to experience it as an individual, as a cosmic being, and also maintaining its transcendence. Immanent, it is transcendent. Individual, it is cosmic. All of this must be struck as a chord in the life that we have here on earth for the cosmos to be fulfilled. Even in the ignorance, the individual lives really in the universal and for the universal purpose. For in the very act of pursuing the purposes and desires of his ego, he is forced by nature to contribute by his egoistic action to her work and purpose in the worlds. But it is without conscious intention, imperfectly done. And his contribution is to her half-evolved and half-conscious, her imperfect and crude movement. To escape from ego and be united with the divine is at once the liberation and the consummation of his individuality. So liberated, purified, perfected, the individual, the divine soul, lives consciously and entirely as was from the first intended, in and for the cosmic and transcendent divine and for his will in the universe. So we see Sri Aurobindo's own life, the pith of his spiritual experiences at different stages, from Baroda to the Alipur jail to his cave of Tapasya in Pondicherry, proving these truths at every stage, and that ultimately is the grand unification of all this in the span of human existence that is important for the divine, because it is the divine who has embarked on this. In the way of knowledge, we may arrive at a point where we can leap out of personality and universe, escape from all thought and will and works and all way of nature, and absorbed and taken up into eternity, plunge into the transcendence. That, though not obligatory on the God-knower, may be the soul's decision, the turn pursued by the self within us. And of course, that's Jnana Yoga. In the way of devotion, we may reach through an intensity of adoration and joy, union with the Supreme All-Beloved, and remain eternally in the ecstasy of His presence, absorbed in Him alone, intimately in one world of bliss with Him. That, then, may be our being's impulsion, its spiritual choice. But in the way of works, another prospect opens. For traveling on that path, we can enter into liberation and perfection by becoming of one law and power of nature with the Eternal. We are identified with Him in our will and dynamic self as much as in our spiritual status. A divine way of works is the natural outcome of this union, a divine living in a spiritual freedom, the body of its self-expression. In the integral yoga, these three lines of approach give up their exclusions, meet and coalesce, or spring out of each other. Liberated from the mind's veil over the self, we live in the transcendence, enter by the adoration of the heart into the oneness of a supreme love and bliss, and all our forces of being uplifted into the one force, our will and works surrendered into the one will and power, assume the dynamic perfection of the divine nature. And this is hinted at in the 18th chapter of the Gita, the 57th shloka. Devoting all yourself to me, giving up in your conscious mind all your actions to me, resorting to the yoga of the will and intelligence, be always one in heart and consciousness with me. What else is left? If you act it out, if you love it out, if you're conscious of it in all beings. This is the grand unification of the various strands of nature, self-revealing the divine who was self-hidden in this. So we can see that we're coming towards the end, let us say, of this yoga of divine works, because while this is the end of the 12th chapter, there is one that he wrote as a kind of appendix. The Supermind and the Yoga of Works is the provisional title, which he did not ask to be published when this first came out around 1948. So we'll go through that and then have reached a summary of his approach to works in the synthesis. But we began with the four aids. Move through self-consecration, the nature of the sacrifice, the standards of conduct which we must set aside to live by the law of the soul, to realize our identity with the Supreme is necessary for us to be able to permit the Supreme Will to conduct its energizations through us, and along the way, annihilate the ego, live in equality, become master and sovereign of the three modes of nature, so that we can invite into them their divine corollaries. Know who the master of the work is. Allow that master to work through us, because our soul is identical with that larger being. And then we'll see where we are. This Sri Aurobindo spent time revising, revisioning in some ways, and presenting to the world, because this was the work that was most apt and most relevant to the spiritual community which had formed itself around him and his radiant collaborator, the mother. So here we are. Our lives have practical value. Our work has profound meaning in it when we become aware of the profundities of our being. When we erase artificial divisions, when we no longer need an ego to be an individual, when we can live from the light of our soul, then the divine can begin to illuminate and collect illuminated individuals and fashion societies which can lean into the rest of the world and not simply gladden that world, but uplift it. So a world to be transformed means there must be some segment of the human species which doesn't live from desire for egoistic purposes, but instead sees everything as a wonderful expression of divinity and is avid of service, avid of exploration and discovery, and melts each time it sees another soul in front of it. A life of adoration in service to the one whom we know and see in all beings. This is a script for us to follow. This is the Lila for us. It is a play, a well-crafted, many-dimensional, eonic play. But you have the energy, you have the will, and again, you're indestructible. So, we'll take up the 13th chapter next time. This happy dozen we have completed. So, last week we were reading from Book 11, the Book of Everlasting Day. And we were in The Soul's Choice and The Supreme Consummation, of course. And we quit reading at the bottom of page 700. Let's continue and start at the top of page 701. Even my disaster's clutch shall be to thee the ordeal of my rapture's contrary shape. In pain's self shall smile on thee my secret face. Thou shalt bear my ruthless beauty unabridged amid the world's intolerable wrongs, trampled by the violent misdeeds of time, cry out to the ecstasy of my rapture's touch. All beings shall be to thy life my emissaries. Drawn to me on the bosom of thy friend, compelled to meet me in thy enemy's eyes, my creatures shall demand me from thy heart. Thou shalt not shrink from any brother's soul. Thou shalt be attracted helplessly to all. Men seeing thee shall feel my hands of joy. In sorrow's pangs feel steps of the world's delight. Their life experience, its tumultuous shock in the mutual craving of two opposites. Hearts touched by thy love shall answer to my call, discover the ancient music of the spheres in the revealing accents of thy voice, and nearer draw to me because thou art. Enamored of thy spirit's loveliness, they shall embrace my body and thy soul, hear in thy life the beauty of my laugh. know the thrilled bliss with which I made the worlds. All that thou hast shall be for others' bliss. All that thou art shall to my hands belong. I will pour delight from thee as from a jar. I will whirl thee as my chariot through the ways. I will use thee as my sword and as my lyre. I will play on thee my minstrelsies of thought. And when thou art vibrant with all ecstasy, and when thou lift'st one spirit with all things, then will I spare thee not my living fires, but make thee a channel for my timeless force. My hidden presence led thee unknowing on from thy beginning in earth's voiceless bosom, through life and pain and time and will and death, through outer shocks and inner silences, along the mystic roads of space and time, to the experience which all nature hides. Who hunts and seizes me, my captive grows. This shalt thou henceforth learn from thy heartbeats. Forever love, O beautiful slave of God. O lasso of my rapture's widening noose, become my cord of universal love. The spirit ensnared by thee, forced to delight of creation's oneness, sweet and fathomless, compelled to embrace my myriad unities and all my endless forms and divine souls. O mind, grow full of the eternal peace. O word, cry out the immortal litany. Built is the golden tower, the flame child born. Descend to life with him thy heart desires. O Satyavan, O luminous Savitri, I sent you forth of old beneath the stars, a dual power of God in an ignorant world, in a hedged creation shut from limitless self, bringing down God to the insentient globe, lifting earth beings to immortality. In the world of my knowledge and my ignorance, where God is unseen and only is heard a name, and knowledge is trapped in the boundaries of mind, and life is hauled in the dragnet of desire, and matter hides from the soul from its own sight, you are my force at work to uplift earth's fate, myself that moves up the immense incline between the extremes of the spirit's night and day. He is my soul that climbs from nescient night through life and mind and supernature's vast to the supernal light of timelessness, and my eternity hid in moving time, and my boundlessness cut by the curve of space. It climbs to the greatness it has left behind, and to the beauty and joy from which it fell, to the closeness and sweetness of all things divine, to light without bounds and life illimitable, taste of the depths of the ineffable's bliss, touch of the immortal and the infinite. He is my soul that gropes out of the beast to reach humanity's heights of lucent thought and the vicinity of truths sublime. He is the Godhead growing in human lives and in the body of earth beings' forms. He is the soul of man climbing to God in nature's surge out of earth's ignorance. Namaste, Jai Ma.